Hello and welcome to the final question and answer teleseminar for the ACX Masterclass Home Study Course 2015. Our website, acxmasterclass.com. I'm Dan O'Day, and that gentleman right over there, can you wave a little bit?
I am.
Oh, is David H. Lawrence the 17th.
Hey there.
And as those of you who are here, I'm guessing that you know that we decided to offer a home study version of the ACX Masterclass this year. And so this is the second or third, I've lost track, teleseminar that we have scheduled simply to answer your questions about audiobooks, about ACX, with the overall aim not to sell you on the class, but to help you decide whether joining the class is a good thing for you to do, and that will vary according to who you are. So we have encouraged people to join us tonight and ask their questions live. We also told folks that if they thought they might not be able to attend live, or if they'd be somewhere where they couldn't speak easily, that they were free to email their questions to us. And I have, I think, five questions that were emailed to us in advance. So, David, let's first see if any of our live attendees have a question. And the way you ask a question here is real easy. Just hit *6 on your telephone keypad, and you can do that right now. *6 on your telephone keypad, and I am monitoring this online, and when you hit *6, you virtually or metaphorically will be raising your hand, and I'll be able to unmute you one at a time. And David, how will people know if they've been unmuted?
A woman by the name of Mildred Hausman will say in only your ear, if you're the one being unmuted, only to you, you have been unmuted. And she'll say it in a way that really sets you up for a great question. She makes you want to ask your question. And so Mildred is the world champion in announcing that people have been unmuted, and we got her because she's a friend of Dan's.
But we still have to pay. You know, we pay
right,
her rate.
Right, not as much. Not as much as normal, according to you.
A little bit off.
So she's going to be the one that says, you have been unmuted. When you hear that, trust in Mildred that she's telling you the truth. That means that now everyone can hear you. So if you have the radio blaring in the background, or kids or dogs running around, or the traffic noise, we're going to hear all that. So the moment that you hear you have been unmuted, you are going to be unmuted and can instantly ask your question. You don't have to wait for somebody to say, please go ahead, or you're on the air, or why don't you try the bacon and horseradish schmear. When somebody says you have been unmuted, that's the truth. You have been unmuted. Go ahead and ask your question.
But how do they know that she's talking to them and not to somebody else who is?
Because only, as I said, only the person that's being unmuted will hear Mildred say that. No one
David,
else will.
Anyone who signs up for the class during this live call, they're gonna get a Trust in Mildred T-shirt. And you know, that's my mom's name. So here we go. *6 on your telephone keypad. The final thing we ask you is when you raise your hand, when you hit *6. Please, regardless of what device you have been listening with, pick up your telephone handset and be ready to speak into that, because we really want to be able to hear your questions. And often when it's Bluetooth or a cell phone at the bottom of a well with Timmy or something, it can be difficult. So let's jump in. And David, as you know, the first question is always the best. So
you sure?
Oh, are you kidding? If you don't believe me, ask Mildred.
Yeah.
Oh, hey.
Hey.
I didn't think I'd be the first up. This is Brian Galland. Thanks for running the class here.
Hey, Brian. Welcome, Brian.
Looking forward to it. Hey, I had a couple of different questions, but maybe I can just start with one that gets to the heart of how this course works or how effective it is. Do you measure how successful it is, like graduate XYZ went on to record X amount of audiobooks and win a Pulitzer Prize for recording audiobooks and things of that nature.
Wow, Pulitzer Prize, that would be something.
How do you do it?
Well, Brian, did you, just out of curiosity, did you happen to see our 60-day report video?
You know what? I have watched a few of them. I don't think I watched that one.
Okay, because we, and then David, I'm sure, has a much better answer, but what happened was about a month after the end of the last class that we taught, which was February to March, I just was struck by how many people on our Mastermind group page kept reporting, you know, I just landed this book, or this book's just been put on sale. And so, inspired by that, we surveyed them. And we asked them, basically, what have your results been? And that's the only kind of statistical analysis we have. And it is, as any survey like this is, it is possibly a biased sample because not everyone in the class responded. Now, it's possible that all the people who didn't respond, well, it's not possible because I know it's not true, but theoretically it's possible that all the people who didn't respond did not respond because they haven't recorded anything yet. That doesn't happen to be true, but it could be a biased sample. But I can share with you some of that stuff. But David, how do you measure, what is the success rate of graduates from our course, and how do you measure it?
You know, this is one of those things where I measure it a little bit differently from others, and that is, you know, how much am I making versus how much time did I spend on things, and I get, you know, I try to hone and refine those things over time, and there are others who measure it by reactions to their auditions and bookings. There are others who do it because they want to get better at voiceover in general or get better at audiobooks, and so they don't start measuring anything until they start working on books on a pretty regular basis. But what I would say is, like anything else that you measure in your career as a performer, whether it's on camera and voiceover, as I do, or just voiceover, that you can't really improve what you don't measure. And measuring the number of auditions that you do, the number of auditions that result in bookings, and then in turn the number of dollars earned on each of those bookings based on the research that you did in the very beginning on the author to see if they would probably sell well, those are all metrics that you luckily are able to see every day in the ACX dashboard. So if you're talking about the actual numbers that you should reach, well, you know, that's going to vary wildly from person to person. When you're first starting off, I wouldn't hang my hat so much on a booking percentage, although many of our students book almost immediately. What I would say is, you know, if you're not gaining any traction, if you're not getting any bookings at all, we need to take a look at your process, your output, your quality, maybe your equipment, maybe your performance. There's so many different variables that go into that. But there's no general rule of thumb. I mean, I have a rule of thumb for myself based on my past performance. I book about 28% of what I audition for on camera, and I book a little bit more than that, about 30% of what I audition for in voiceover in general. And, you know, I probably booked higher than that on ACX, because to me ACX is a very hungry marketplace and very much a seller's marketplace as opposed to a buyer's marketplace. There are far fewer good narrators than there are books to be narrated. So, I mean, if you wanted to press me as to a rule of thumb, you know, if you book a third of what you go out for, I'm sure a lot of people would be very happy with that.
Yeah.
Now, Brian, I had interpreted your question perhaps incorrectly as asking about kind of the success rate overall representing our class.
Yeah, that is. Can you still hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that is kind of what I was looking at. If you guys had any metrics for yourself.
Okay.
Meaning, you know, hey, we had this many people go through the class, and look how many people have, you know, landed
right.
successful careers, side careers, whatever else, doing this. But
would you be excited to know that, of the people that have taken the class so far, over 350 books have been narrated, produced, accepted to ACX's standards, and are on sale in the Audible, iTunes, and Amazon marketplaces?
And that's 350-plus books in about 15 months since
awesome.
We launched the class.
Yeah, it would be really sad if we did this class, labeled it a master class, and had no results from it. What we're really excited about is that people to a class, I mean, we've done the class a few times, every single class, people start booking during the class, not afterwards, after a couple of weeks to let everything settle in and to get your
yeah.
equipment all squared away and all that. Literally, mm-hmm. people can't hold themselves back from auditioning, and our rights holders, you know, the people that they contact, seem to like what they hear. So, and I think part of that is that we have a really good group of people that want to do this work and are willing to put whatever voiceover skills they already have in place to work if appropriate, and to adjust the skills that they may have
yeah.
To the world of audiobook narration.
Yeah.
Well, it also, we were greatly surprised. I was shocked in the first class that we taught. I had been hoping, kind of hoping against hope, that maybe before the class ended, one of our students would end up booking something. Because we don't say, go audition for stuff, try to get work. We're just trying to teach you the stuff, so at the end of the month, you'll be able to go out there. And
yeah.
so I was thinking, well, that'd be pretty neat. You know, it would make us look pretty good if a student actually booked an audition for an audiobook before the class was over, and I was six, eight, I don't know how many people, a lot of them did, including one, the first time we taught it, one who emailed me in a panic, because we have, one of the assignments we have, one of the weeks, is we have you audition for stuff, and it's not really to see how well you audition, it's to guide you through the process
yeah.
of selecting the auditions that, you know, to home in on what is best for you. And so our idea was not that we hope you win the audition. Our idea was that we hope you get the experience. And I got an email from somebody in the very first week of the very first class, and she said, I don't know what to do. They want to hire me. And she had never edited audio yet at all.
Yeah.
And she said, if I say no, I might never get offered a job again. And my advice very strongly, and somewhere I still have the email, was that she politely decline, because this, even though the recording and editing method that David teaches is extraordinarily easy, I think the parallel burdens of learning how to do everything while you are doing your first audiobook, I think that is more stress than a human being needs.
Yeah.
And so I kind of forced her. I couldn't force her, but I kind of forced her anyway. I said,
yeah.
look, trust me, you're going to get another offer. And I believe she got another offer in the fourth week, and that one she accepted. So that's really common. As far as playing with numbers a little bit here, the 350 plus books that David mentioned, in December, so about six months ago, that number was 170.
Mm-hmm.
So it has more than doubled in 6 months. I'm pretty good at math. I'm pretty sure it's going to be more than twice that 6 months from now, and sometime in 2016, and David, I don't know if you recall, you had said this, you hadn't predicted a time, but you said, you know, pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
You said, you know, pretty soon, we're going to have 1,000 audiobooks out there. Sometime
yeah.
in 2016, I believe there will be 1,000 audiobooks for sale on Audible.com, Amazon.com, and iTunes produced by our students, which
Dana, David, let me jump in real quick. I really didn't mean to come across as disrespectful at all in asking that question. I didn't hear any disrespect.
What are you talking about?
Well,
no, I don't know. No, not. I mean, I think it's a valid question.
Yeah.
You know, and I wish I had. I wish there were a way to give you more specific statistics. And having said that, I'm sure there must be some students who have not yet recorded an audiobook.
Right.
When we surveyed them at the end of this year's class, so it was 30 days after the class, and we asked them one question. We asked two. Before the class started, how many audiobooks had you ever recorded in your life? And the vast majority of the answer was zero.
Yeah.
And then second question was, how many have you recorded since the day you started the class and today, which was about 60 days? And of the people who responded, they had recorded an average of 2.02 books. And that was within 30 days of the class being over. So beyond that, I don't think you sounded disrespectful at all. And David, maybe this is the part where we're supposed to say your mileage may vary and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it depends on so many other things. It depends on how much work you put into it. It depends on what time you have. It depends on what your environment is like. It depends on what equipment you've chosen to put in, et cetera. And, you know, the big elephant in the room is it also depends on how talented you are.
Right.
And Brian, you know, if you get a chance, first of all, what you really should do is just go sign up for the class right now. But if you're not going to do that...
Okay.
If you're going to ignore my advice, what I want you to do is go to acxmasterclass.com and click on a tab at the top of the page that says video training. And the very first video there is the 60-day ACX Masterclass student success report. And you'll just see tons of people telling you in their own words, you know, where they had been before the class, where they are now, what progress they made. And it will not give you a good statistical idea, but yeah, I think you'll get a good idea of the kinds of results that a whole lot of our students have gotten.
Thank you. I'm a news guy. I guess it's just the who, what, where, when, how in me that was looking for a statistical background to it. But
you do TV news, right? You come from TV news,
right? Yeah.
Let me put it this way.
Yeah.
Informed sources tell us, unnamed sources within the ACX Masterclass. So, if Brian, you know what? Nobody else has their hand up. So, and I know you have more questions.
Yeah, if you don't mind, that'd be great. Thank you.
But before we continue, let me just remind people: we really do want your questions. You know, God knows we don't want to hear only Brian, right, David?
Yeah.
Star 6 on your telephone keypad, and please do not try to be polite by not raising your hand until we are done talking to Brian. You can't interrupt us. If you hit star 6 and Brian's talking, it's not going to interrupt anything. You won't be unmuted, but we'll be able to see that you're there with a question, and then maybe we'll go from Brian and then to you and then back to Brian. Someone else has a question. So I know you, because you had sent us four, so what else?
I did. And as far as polite, I mean, I started talking with my mouth full when I started asking my question, so polite is right out the window. We're in good shape here. I wanted to ask about, just in terms of the additional part to it, I had asked about a website presence or what sort of advertising that a voiceover artist in this realm would kind of need to keep the business coming. I didn't know if that was a big part of the time commitment for it, or what the best way to do that would be, what that would look like. If somebody knows your name, I imagine they're going to Google it or whatever else, and what sort of web presence, web page, whatever else would you need for yourself, or if that's a big priority.
David, can I try tackling this first?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
I was busy eating. I didn't hear the question.
Now, understand, Brian, we are talking very specifically about ACX. So we're not talking voiceovers in general. We're not even talking the entire world of audiobooks in general. We're talking about ACX in particular. And on ACX, the questions you asked pretty much become moot. They have built a marketing platform for you. So you have Amazon.com and Audible.com and iTunes both promoting and advertising your work. And if you're wondering, wait a minute, what do you mean advertising? If you've ever seen, they're called retargeted ads. You know, if you've ever looked at an audiobook online, and then the next day there's an ad for it on Facebook or something, that's what they're doing. That's paid for by Audible.com or Amazon.com. And so they're doing all that stuff. Now, that doesn't mean it's a bad idea to have your own website, but your website is not going to attract rights holders, the people who have the rights to the books, usually authors, but sometimes publishing houses and other entities. Your website is not going to attract rights holders on the ACX platform who are looking for narrators, because they're going to look on the ACX platform. And having said that, and when you create your profile, there is a place for you to link to your website. The fact that there's a place to link to your website does not mean that you need to have one. And if you do have, I think it's the first week we talk about this. One of the big mistakes that voiceover people make is really linking to the wrong site or to a site that works against them. So, that's, as far as advertising and do you have to have a website for ACX, in my opinion, absolutely not. David, do you have something to add to that?
Yeah, no. I mean, what you don't want to do is you don't want to, dilute the effectiveness of what you do to make your profile better, and you also don't want to be shouting where no one is listening. Sure, people can look things up and they can find things and they may find your site, but what you want to do is drive them towards your ACX profile so that they're right there and ready to buy when they hear what you're doing and how you're doing it, and they don't have to go looking for you on ACX. So you can certainly add a link to your ACX profile on your already existing voiceover page, and you want to promote it wherever you can, but I wouldn't take the time and engage in the effort to create a sort of a reproduction of what they give you for free on ACX, especially when you're in the bazaar, you're not down the road at a separate site. So I think that's what you asked, right?
Yeah, that's what he asked. And okay. And also, there's nothing, unfortunately, most narrators, they think about promotion or marketing as attracting new clients, and that certainly is part of it. A big part that we teach in the class is marketing toward the people who have already hired you. And
right.
By that I don't mean sending them junk mail, but there are things that you can do to make it much more likely that they will return to you to narrate their next work rather than start all over. And that does fall under the rubric of marketing. Now, Brian,
yep.
don't go away. We do have somebody else who has raised his or her hand to ask a question. But don't go away because I know you got one or two more, okay?
Hi, this is Bobby.
Hey, Bobby.
I'm back in Connecticut.
Oh, really? What part?
What
part of Connecticut?
Danbury. Well, actually, I'm up in
Danbury.
New Milford. Yeah, I'm the one who knows Tom Zarecki.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, Bobby wrote me today. Tom Zarecki, a friend from my radio days.
I know Tom, sure.
Yeah, sure.
From our
that's great.
RCS.
The home of the Spinning Wheel Restaurant.
Okay, do you know that, Bobby, do you know that Connecticut is the only state to have two official mottos?
No, I did not know that.
David, did you know that?
I didn't, nor did I care.
See, that's just one of the many things that you will learn when you join the ACX Masterclass.
Oh, come on.
It's the Nutmeg State and it's the Constitution State.
Oh, I knew that we were both of those,
but both
didn't
of those
realize that
are
was
official.
A motto.
They're both official.
Okay.
So, Bobby, what's your question?
Well, I've got a couple of questions. First, on the ACX platform, the books that are being put out there, are they mostly self-published books, or are they also from publishing houses? And so I guess my question is, what's the nature of the books that we'd be narrating?
David?
Mostly self-published books, but many of the books are self-published by authors who have an amazing following, and if by self-publishing you mean we'll sell two copies, one to the author and one to the author's mother, you know, we train you on how to avoid that problem.
And David, what you just said, I want to say, what you just described, though, probably is the norm of a self-published title there. You know, there's a lot of stuff that if one of your goals is to make money as a narrator, there's a lot of stuff you should not be auditioning for or accepting offers for.
Yeah, and the class will teach us how to decipher which ones are which are books that are more viable to be sold and
that's a very important part of what we teach. We're not teaching you this so that you start to do this work out of the kindness of your heart or on a random basis.
And Bobby, have you ever heard? I don't know if you've ever heard anyone say that a narrator cannot make a reasonable income from ACX because they're all royalty share and none of them sells. If you've ever heard something like that, what that tells you is they never learned how to research authors and titles.
Well, the first I heard of ACX was when I got the email Saturday. I must have missed the ones previous to this. So, and I heard a little bit about on Sunday. I listened to a little bit of the pre-recorded conference call like this.
Ah,
got it.
So at any rate, you know, what David alluded to and what you somewhat alluded to, the concept of self-published authors who are never going to sell any books or any audiobooks, there are plenty of them on ACX, and we want to steer you away from them.
Okay.
And you said you had another question.
Yeah. Is this the kind of work that you could eventually jump into doing work outside of the ACX platform?
Sure. Many of the skills that we share with you will be transferable to the world of narrating outside of ACX, especially there in Connecticut, because you can slip on down to the city or you can slip on down to New Jersey and work right in the Audible studios. It is becoming more and more a path via ACX and proving that you're capable of doing this kind of work. It's becoming more and more likely that you will be able to gain work with the publishing houses outside of the ACX zeitgeist.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's see if Brian has some more questions. And anyone else, star 6 on your telephone keypad. I'm Dan O'Day. That is David H. Lawrence, the 17th. And we're shortly going to close registration for the ACX Masterclass Home Study Course. Closing registration on Friday of this week, and we're taking questions to help you decide whether this is right for you. And David has already announced that anyone who registers during this call gets a free T-shirt and a unicycle. So I just thought I'd mention that.
What are you talking about?
Well, you inferred that, or you implied that. I inferred it. Hi, Brian.
Yeah. Hey.
Okay.
I didn't want to cut off the banter. Are you guys good?
Yep.
I think as banter goes, it's okay, but it might get better.
Yeah, I wouldn't say good is a good idea.
Okay, Brian. Okay. I asked a question about a reasonable dollar amount that you could expect from work like this on a per week, per month kind of basis, and what type of time commitment that involved.
David?
Okay, so one is dependent on the other.
Yeah.
There are people who, I'm assuming you already have a full-time job and you're still an anchor on television, yes?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So because of that, you know, you will choose to create a schedule that fits within your lifestyle. And that may mean, you know, a couple hours a night. It may mean 3 or 4 hours a night. It might mean an hour a night. Who knows? Or per day. I don't know when your anchor, if you're the evening or late night guy, then it'd be during the day.
but and it also depends on how, you know, this is, again, the big elephant in the room. It depends on how good you are. Because there are some people who very much struggle to do the performance, they struggle to do the technical side of things, and they struggle with the business. And they, we've seen it time and time again where we have students who come in who are petrified of any one or all three of those different pieces of what needs to come together to make this successful. You know, I think about how I was when I first started off in terms of being tentative in the studio and being very concerned about making a mistake. And now, you know, I come in, I clear my throat, I sit down, and I start working, and I make far fewer mistakes than I did 20, 30 years ago when I first started.
Right.
So it depends on your own efficiency in terms of the work. It, you know, once you've created a muscle memory for all that you have done, you will find that the amount of time that you spend working on the project versus the output or the final, you know, yield of what you get in terms of a finished hour is going to just steadily increase. And what we're hoping for is that the ratio of hours spent working on the project to finished hours begins to steadily decrease. There are people who say, oh, it'll take me anywhere between 6 and 10 hours to do the work for one finished hour of an audiobook. And my current ratio, despite what some people find to be balderdash, is about 2.5 to 1. And part of that is the editing process that I use. Part of that is the fact that I make fewer mistakes than a lot of readers do. And part of it is because I have a system set up that makes it easy for me to simply start working. I don't have to rearrange my life. I don't have to rearrange my office or my den. I don't have to, like, start putting up, you know, blankets and you know, just redo my entire existence. I come in, I sit down in my chair, I adjust the microphone, and I launch both Preview and Audacity, and I get to work. And sometimes Preview and Audacity are already launched, so I save that time as well. So it's all about, and we teach you all of the ways to make that life better.
And Brian, so, part of your question was, what's a reasonable dollar amount to expect?
Yeah.
And I don't know of any way to offer you any kind of helpful, measurable response. You know, I mean, what will it, all the things David just named will affect the dollar amount that you get, but then it's a matter of how much are you working, what are you auditioning for, how, you know, do you have your skills down, do you have you learned how to simply to narrate? You know, you don't have to be. It doesn't take years of training to learn to narrate audiobooks, but you do have to know what you're doing, which is why we have this class. But it's a little bit like asking how much an actor should expect to make in a typical year.
Unfortunately,
the answer to that is nothing, you know?
Yeah. Just real quick, I don't even know how, I mean, how do you bill it? Is it per that finished hour, or is it per a project, or...
So there's actually three ways that ACX outlines for you to get paid, and it's a choice that they make, not a choice that you make. So a project is assigned one of these three categories, and then we have a fourth category that we encourage you, once you're at a point where you can start to call your shots a little bit by yourself, to engage with as well. And the ACX methods are per finished hour, which is traditional. That's the way audiobooks have been done for decades. And if you're, are you a union member, Brian?
Oops, let me unmute him.
I am not.
Okay. So even if you're not, you can still do projects for ACX on a per finished hour basis. And if they are at a particular level per hour, you can also command a contribution to the AFTRA Health and Retirement Plan. And the cool news is there, you don't have to be a member of the AFTRA union to do that. You can create it no matter what, because by federal law, they have to allow anybody in.
not the union, but the health and retirement plan. Then the second way to make money is via what's called royalty share, and I've had, you know, a lot of people poo-poo royalty share as being, you know, that's when you do the work and you don't get paid. And to which I reply, that's when you don't do good research on the work that you're about to do, you do the work and you don't get paid.
Well, David, just as an example, I mean, if somebody were to record the audio book version of the story of Robert Durst, let's say, you know, that guy, you know, they had the HBO series about, they would probably, that would probably turn a pretty penny, wouldn't it?
It would. Right. You know, I just did that, as a matter of fact. It was.
Oh, you're kidding.
I did. It wasn't a royalty share book, but if it was, I would be extraordinarily happy doing that. And then the third one, the third way of getting paid is kind of a combination of the two. It's called a stipend project, where you get royalty share. You get you split the royalties with the author in both cases, both with pure royalty share and with a stipend. But in a stipend project, ACX actually pays you $100 per hour plus your health and retirement on that, just to produce the book. And they do that for books that they want to get into the marketplace very quickly. And so one of the things that we teach you is how to search on those projects first and then go about other ways of getting paid. And then there's a fourth one, which we talk about in the class, that is, I wouldn't say it's an advanced strategy, but it's certainly a strategy that I employ on a regular basis, and I have more takers than non-takers.
I would say it is almost a unique strategy.
Well, I mean, okay.
I mean, I'm
the one that tends to push back and go, Dan, I didn't invent this. I just codified it and made it better.
Well, I'm just saying that I really doubt. I would be surprised if there. I would be surprised if there are any people outside our class who do that simply because they would not think to do it. It's a really cool method. But Brian, just to make sure we're clear on something, David said there are, you know, three methods that ACX has and that ACX decides that you don't, ACX doesn't decide what jobs, how do I say this? You decide what jobs to audition for. So when David said ACX decides that you don't, well, they don't say, okay, Brian, you have to do this book, and this book only pays this way. You audition for the books that you want, and if you want only royalty share, you can only audition for those, or if you want only stipend or only per finished hour. So you do have that flexibility. So *6 on your telephone keypad, and I know Brian has at least one more question, *6 on your telephone keypad. I'm Dan O'Day, that's David H. Lawrence the 17th, and our website, acxmasterclass.com, we are closing registration on Friday, and we are here to help you decide whether this kind of makes sense for you or not. You've been unmuted. Hello.
Hey there.
Hi.
Hi.
I just got unmuted, so.
Yes, so it's your turn to talk.
Okay. This is Amy from New York.
Hey, Amy.
I'm in your VO to GoGo Pro program.
Oh, Amy Sponza.
Yes, that's me.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good.
Good.
I'm looking at your ACX, at the curriculum, and one of the things I'm looking at is, you know, in the first week about the profile, which I set up,
mm-hmm.
And one of the things it had was, where did I have it? I just scrolled away from it. But profiles that attract jobs and the important elements of your profile.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have, here we go. I have empty nest mom with warm, engaging middle American voice. Credits, I put in, you know, lots of Shakespeare, and some of the other plays that I've done.
So let me just jump in here real quick. Dan and I both sort of tag team on this,
mm-hmm.
and Dan has a really amazing sense for what attracts rights holders and what can possibly, if not just simply not be useful to them, but actually repel them from your profile. You know, he leads you in that week through a series of things to do, as well as, you know, some people respond very well to, here's the best things you can do. And other people respond very well to, here's the things you desperately want to avoid so you don't kill yourself, you know, to avoid mistakes. So he expertly leads you through both. And I don't know if you want to address this, Dan, but, you know, if your question is, you know, what do you teach in that part, it's pretty expansive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it would not be appropriate for us to teach it in this call, but yeah, it is extensive and expansive. What I can tell you, let's say you don't take this class, but you want to learn how to do a better profile. If nothing else, look at 100 profiles on ACX at random and don't do what they do, and you'll be better off.
It's the truth. Every time I go at random and I just look for, you know, Abrams Zabrinowitz, it's amazing.
And I know I understand how snarky that sounds of me and how smug and superior. The fact is most I'm going to say at least 90%, and I think it's higher than that, at least 90% of the profiles on ACX, the people put them up without having a clue what they were doing. All they knew was they thought it was like opening a Facebook account. Well, let's see. It wants to know where I'm from. Okay, I'll put that in. No, this is a marketing tool.
Right.
And the fact that they ask for this or that or the other does not necessarily mean you should give it. And it's very different than simply a resume. So, as David said,
we
cover that in great detail, including, what's the word I'm looking for, David? Deconstructing. We take an actual profile from ACX and look at it virtually word by word. And afterwards, we tend to get a lot of raised eyebrows and people going, oh, my gosh, I never thought of that. And, you know, they never say, my God, Dan, you're a genius. No one could have thought of that. What they say is, why didn't I think of that myself? I mean, now that you've said it, it's so obvious. So it's simply marketing.
Right.
Was there another question that you had?
Well, yeah, I was just going to say, I did spend some time looking at some of the ACX-approved profiles, trying to get an idea of what, you know, what ones are, you know, what, and
well,
listening to them.
Well, an ACX approved profile is they are endorsing the narrator's ability to narrate.
Looking at their profile so much as listening to their voices and trying to gauge what qualities they had. And, you know, I haven't recently, I've been working on a Shakespeare in the Park production that just started. We're going to do in August, so I'm not sure that I'm going to have the time to devote to the four-week program, although it sounds great. I don't know that I can do it right now, but
the good news is you can do it at your pace because it's not... there's no appointments other than I think we're going to have one call on Monday and a couple of calls after the class has been completely released. We have a couple of people who have vacations this summer who are going to be traveling for business, you know, whatever. They have other things. They're in shows. The whole point of it being a home study course is you can download and do the work whenever you want. So there are some people from when we did this last year who never got around to doing the work until July or August, but they were able to get the stuff and have turned it into a great business. I'm not saying that you aren't a busy person and, you know, you should set aside the time for it. What I'm saying is that we've tried to make it as flexible as we possibly can in terms of when and where you can get the audio and get the materials and put it all to work.
Yeah, I think... The biggest advantage for the home study course of the suggested timeline that we present you with is if you are not too booked to do it, it provides you with a structure in which to work and an impetus. You know, when you have somebody saying, okay, see if you can, you know, we'd like you to do this week. If you already have committed to it, if you're not in a show or you're not on, you know, on vacation or something, and you're planning to do it within the 4 weeks or so, this is a way to make it as easy as possible for you. But it's, you know, it, you do it at your pace and when you want. David and I have a, you say bias, right? A bias for action, David?
I say that, you know, we both figured out we did, but I think that most successful people or people that want to be more successful can acquire this is what's called a bias for action. And in some cases, it's just practical. You know, like I always tell people, you get a job, get it done long before it's due. Get it done in such a way that you're, you know, really managing the process well for your rights holder. Because what's happening to me right now during this call is I feel a cold coming on.
Uh-oh.
And I know that it is going to take me some time to get through that. And so to that end, when you get something on your plate, first in, first out, as accelerated as possible. So that's what I mean is a bias for action. And now I have a few days that I can actually, you know, get better.
And this, I'm taking this broader than the scope of the call, but just in general, if whether it is learning how to do audiobooks on ACX or whether it's learning how to ride a horse, if you wait until a really convenient time, that's never going to happen. I mean, if you're going to wait for the time when you just got nothing else going on, you're caught up on all your work, all your commitments. I mean, David, seriously, when's the last time you found yourself saying, gosh, I've got nothing to do?
I was just thinking about how that hasn't happened in 28 years.
Yeah, I mean, I literally cannot remember the last. I wish I could. But I think at some time, maybe I guess when I was a kid at least, you know, I can remember there being times hanging around the house with nothing to do. But, you know, these days for almost all of us, that's not the case. So whatever it is that you want to take on, whatever challenge you want to take on, please don't wait for a convenient time. Because a convenient time is like Bigfoot, okay? It's, you know, much discussed, rarely seen. So *6 on your telephone keypad if you have a question for David H. Lawrence, the 17th, and or Dan O'Day. This is the ACX Masterclass that we're talking about. Our website with a bunch of cool videos for you to look at is acxmasterclass.com. And we're going back to Brian.
Yeah, I'll ask the last question. I had asked about the pet gear you need and if you have to have that soundproof room at the house or what's needed to get started on them.
Okay. So, David, what do they need as far as gear, recording gear, equipment, all that kind of stuff, and do they have to have a soundproof
room? Brian, do you have gear already?
I have some, but I definitely don't have the soundproof room.
Got it. So for people are usually coming to this class from one of two main positions. One, they have never done any work like this at home, and so they don't have equipment at home, and they're interested in not overspending, which I'm certainly interested in, and it's one of the reasons that the equipment that we tell you to get will cost you no more than $200, all told, all in. And there are people that go, well, you can't even buy a good microphone for $200, and I beg to differ, and I've worked with thousands of microphones in my time. In terms of a place, you know, we walk you through your home, and we say, here are some best practices, here are some okay practices, and here are some practices that you'll be challenged with. What part of the country do you live in, Brian?
Great Northwest. I'm in Seattle.
Do they have basements up there?
Oof. They try to avoid it. That's damp up here. I'm in a kind of finished garage, I guess you'd say, is where
Your Honor, please direct the witness to simply answer yes or no. Do they have basements in Seattle, Brian?
No. Counsel will be advised that the answer was given. The answer was
Dibble. Not really.
Okay, not really, yeah. So that's like if I still lived in Cleveland or in the house that I had when I was in Washington, D.C., you know, I would have instantly and did create a studio in my basement because it's closed off. I had the ability to build things around it that made it even quieter, and it was great. Absent that, as you walk through your home, you want to look for spaces that when you walk inside and you start to talk, everything is dead. Everything is deadened. Can you think of a place that might be like that in your house, Brian?
Yeah.
What?
Probably, yes, I can.
Which one? What part?
It's probably where I am right now. They finished off half of the garage here, and it's probably the best space I have for that.
So let me ask you a question. When you walk into your closet, how does your voice sound in there with all the clothes in there?
I haven't done that, but if I did, I imagine it would be deader.
Yeah, yeah. So for people that don't have a half garage like Brian does, Mr. I have a half garage, mm-hmm. Brian,
yeah.
People that have, you know, spaces within their abodes that they can look to for this, a walk-in closet is far and away the second best possible place to put something like this, because already you have all of this sound reverberant dampening material around you. I tell people to do this and don't take the clothes out. The very best thing is to spend thousands of dollars and put in an actual studio within one of your rooms, like a Studio Bricks or a Whisper Room. But most people, they don't want to commit, and they are smart to not wanting to commit thousands and thousands of dollars when they're first starting off. And so, you know, I have among my private students and among my my students from ACX Masterclass, people who do everything from narrate in their pretty quiet dining room or den or wherever they have their computer, to people who set up moving blankets in a 4 foot by 4 foot space within a room, and that kind of works really well, to people that go into a closet or at least face a closet by, you know, because maybe they don't have a walk-in closet, but they have one of those closets that it's against a wall. They shove a little card table underneath their sweaters, and off to the races they go. So it does not require that you create a totally soundproofed space. And even those people who do put in a whisper room will tell you that if a plane goes overhead or if a lawnmower is on next door or, you know, there's a siren that goes by, you're going to stop while that's happening and not be able to work.
Yep. Yeah.
David, I think that people would be surprised at the percentage of successful audiobook narrators who do all of their work at home and
mm-hmm.
they don't have anything resembling a whisper room. You know, it's just what you described. There is a room in the house that they have made as quiet as possible.
Yep.
And all quite often, and I know some people are going, what? The closet? What? Yeah, a lot. Not just audiobooks, a whole lot of voiceover work at the highest level has been recorded in closets, in rooms with very little reverberance, with a lot of fabric and not, you know, bare walls and hardwood floors or something. It's the majority. Now, again, to try to make sure I'm not misquoted, I'm not saying the majority of audiobooks are recorded in a closet. I don't know what the percentage is, but the majority is recorded in something that does not resemble a professional recording studio. Which, you know, maybe it's just as well that the consuming public doesn't realize that. Maybe that would take away some of the magic, you know, because to them it looks like, wow, they must be techno wizards with an entire
yep.
staff of engineers.
Right.
So *6 on your telephone keypad if you have a question. This is, I'm Dan O'Day, that's David H. Lawrence, the 17th. If you have a question about recording audiobooks, about ACX, about the ACX Masterclass, which is kind of why we're here, at the moment there are no hands up and we have only one question left that was sent to us in advance. So if no one raises their hand by hitting *6 on the telephone keypad, then this will be the last question of the evening. And this is from Maureen, who actually already has joined the class.
Yep.
So we don't really have to answer this, David. I mean,
yes, we do.
Come on, we already took our money. What?
Hey, okay. hey.
All right. Maureen, thank you. Maureen says, my biggest problem right now is breathing while I'm narrating. I spend so much time shortening things up on my recorded tracks because of the long pauses I take after running out of breath. I hate it. If I could master the art of just reading and breathing naturally, I would save myself so much time. So it's not really a question as much as a statement of a problem.
Yep. Yeah, and I see it a lot. I see a lot of people getting in a situation where they think they have to get an entire paragraph out in one breath or they're not a professional narrator. And the truth is, breathing is a natural part of life. And if you start to alter your breathing patterns just because you're narrating an audiobook, you're going to do yourself and certainly your listener a disservice. You breathe where you need to breathe, and you don't really try to make it more efficient. The goal is, I don't want to hear any breaths, and that should not be a goal. Your listener will get very, very nervous if they don't hear you naturally breathing. They'll start to, very unconsciously, but I've seen it happen, and it happens with me when I listen to something that has breaths taken out of them, you know, you tend to want to breathe for that person. You get short of breath and so on. And in many, many narrators' cases, especially when they're new to it, it's like, well, I assume that you want to edit out all breaths because that's just awful. You don't want to hear people breathing. Well, listen to any audiobook done by a famous narrator. Listen to a book done by Barbara Rosenblatt or Scott Brick or Edward Herman. If you care to, listen to any of my books. I haven't edited a breath out of anything ever. Because to me, it is a way to put the listener at ease that you are connecting with them and you're relating to them. You're not trying to sound artificial, which is what it sounds like. Just breathe. When you need to breathe, breathe. And remember that breaths are also dramatic devices. You know, say you're reeling off a list of things and, you know, at the very end you take a slightly deeper breath to pay off that setup. Like, he swam 2 miles out to sea and he didn't find anything. He swam a mile along the shoreline, still didn't find anything, and returned to the shore to find his son safely sitting on the sand. You know, you've got this whole big thing that happens and then you take a breath and then you pay it off. That's a pretty standard mechanism that's used not only in fiction but also in nonfiction. So in general, I believe that an awful lot of these problems are brought on by something that we have assumed that may or may not be true and usually isn't. And the thing that may or may not be true is you want to minimize your breaths while you're narrating? No, that's not true at all.
And I think this is partly influenced by a generation of radio people, production people, who are so proud of their ability to edit out their breaths.
Yeah, but that's done for time. It's done as a stylistic thing. It's done as a mechanism. You know, if you're doing a concert spot, you're going to overlap them a little bit. Sunday, Parma Speedway.
But you're right. But those are several things. One is there really are people who. It's not for time, it's not for style, it simply is when they breathe, they're going to take that out and...
That's sad.
...silence, because they feel that it's unprofessional, because somebody told them that it's unprofessional. But the ones where they're doing it for time, you've got to ask yourself, do you want to hear an audiobook read at that pace?
No.
And the other thing, you know, David alluded to this, David pointed out, breathing, I think he says, part of life, it's part of speech, and breathing is part of communication. And the people who cut out their breaths, that they don't understand something. If you're communicating to someone, something happens during the breath, and it might be something that we are consciously aware of, or it might all go directly to our subconscious. But breathing is not, again, going back to radio, it's not what radio people call dead air. Breathing is part of the communication.
Yep.
So with Maureen, if you could like give her one, if you say, okay, Maureen, I want you to do this one thing starting now, What would that be to try to
stop
overcome?
Stop worrying about your breathing.
Stop worrying about it?
Yeah. Just simply make the choice. Because sometimes that's really all it is, to change a habit or to change your thoughts on something. It's making the choice to do one thing over another. And it sounds very simplistic and it sounds almost too easy, but man, I've saved a whole lot of internal dialogue and time wasted engaging in that dialogue by saying, you know what, yeah, I'm not going to do that anymore. Or, you know what, I'm going to start doing that right now. And doing it and creating the habit of doing it, or not doing it and not missing it. In this case, my admonition to her would be first identifying what it is that she's afraid of will happen if she does breathe naturally, because that may be it in her case, that she's, you know, concerned that if she breathes naturally, she'll sound amateurish or it'll slow everything down. You know, one of the absolutely selfish parts about not editing your breaths out is you're being paid by the hour, whether you're being paid a per-finished hour, a stipend, or a royalty share, because the longer the book, the more they charge for it. So, you know, cut yourself some slack and add 10 minutes to the entire book by not cutting your breaths out. But more importantly, know and have faith in the fact that when you breathe, when you tell a story, when you take a quick breath at a comma or at a period, you're not doing anything wrong. You're doing everything right. And those things are sometimes counterintuitive, and they make you furrow your brow and say, okay, David, I trust you, but it doesn't sound right to me. Okay, just trust me. When no one ever says, oh my God, I can't believe how I could hear her breathe when she was narrating, that's about the only proof you could have other than me saying it really is natural and it's really important that you remain natural. So I would say if you trust me that far, then please know that all you have to do is stop worrying about it and let yourself breathe where you need to breathe, and you're good to go. Now, there may be a case where someone like those production people in radio that you're talking about have been misinformed about how to perform and misinformed about what is best practices, what is world-class practices when it comes to voicing any kind of material in any different category of voice work. My number one category of voice work has nothing to do with the mainstream categories. It's IVR, which is phone prompts. When you call up America Online, you'll hear my voice welcoming you to the service, as well as about 150 other companies. And there, you know, it's still important that you breathe. When you're doing narration work, it's imperative that you breathe and that you show drama and tension with breaths. When you're doing commercials, you know, unless you're doing a commercial where it's overwritten and it's packed with, you know, five repeats of the phone number and three repeats of the call to action to the website, which would be counterproductive, but sometimes that's the copy that you get, you know, you're left with no choice. But in general, wouldn't it be nicer if you could just do the work and not worry about all of this artificiality and clipping and trimming and toning? And it's just so much more genuine to hear someone speaking, taking breaths where they need to take breaths.
I have a hunch that Maureen doesn't have to take it on faith. I suspect Maureen already has solid proof in her life. If she has ever had the experience of reading a story to a child, I am willing to wager a large sum that she did not worry about her breathing.
No.
She just told the story to the kid. When she had to breathe, she breathed.
Yep.
And she didn't think about it. The child didn't think about it. I almost made a mistake. I started to say, that's all it is. I don't mean that it's not. It is a craft. Depending on what's inside you, it can be an art. You know, it's a performance. So I'm not saying that when I say that's all that it is, I'm not trying to minimize it. But reading a story to a child and having that child just enraptured by it, you know. Like,
mm-hmm.
And then what happened? What could be more glorious?
Yep.
So if you did that already, you've got what it takes.
Yep.
Now it looks like Brian raised his hand. I'm sorry, David.
I agree.
Oh, So Brian's raised his hand again, which is great. Star 6 on your telephone keypad. That's David H. Lawrence the 17th. I'm Dan O'Day. The website is ACX Masterclass. We are closing registration Friday of this week, and we're beginning on Monday. And if next week is real busy for you, doesn't matter. You get everything that you can do at your own pace. So you take as long as you want to.
Hey, I'm going to jump off the call. I just want to say thanks a lot. Once I can find my wife's credit card, I'm signing up for this.
That's funny.
Okay, well, fortunately, I do a mentalism act. I can see where your wife's credit card is. It does have the number 3 in it. Okay, no, thank you. Thank
good,
you for
good. Yeah.
Being with
me. No, I really appreciate it. I'm looking forward to it. Thanks a lot.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
So at the moment, there are no more hands up. We'll give people just a second here. And David, let's assume that we've taken the last question. What thoughts do we want to leave people with?
Well, you know, I would just say that there are lots of ways to go about creating a great practice in doing something. And by practice, I mean it in the same fashion as a medical practice, a legal practice, an engineering practice, an architectural practice. I look at my performance business as a performer, as a practice. I need to stay up to date on all the latest things. I need to create new ways of doing things when called for, and I need to understand traditional ways of doing things when they are the most effective. And I believe that based on the results of what we've done with this class, that we have assembled the best practices possible for doing this kind of work. And I urge you that, you know, before you jump on ACX, before you start narrating books, or if you already have and you're not facing the kind of success that you'd like, that you really take a look at your processes, at your tools, at your skill set, and work to make them the best you possibly can. We believe that this class helps you do that. But however you decide to go about it, don't just throw a bunch of lasagna against the wall like, you know, Felix Unger in The Odd Couple, like Jack Lemmon did, and hope that some of it sticks. Actually be targeted about your lasagna, you know? Really take the time to understand what best practices are and what they can do for you, and also what practices to avoid, even though you know very sure that those are the best things you could possibly do. There are some things that we'll show you that will be a bit of a surprise. So,
and there are no more questions, so I think we should wrap it up.
Sounds great.
We are recording this Wednesday evening, and in just about 48 hours, sometime on Friday, we are closing registration, and that's once we close those doors, it's final. If you want to join us, please, this is the time. Please join us. If you just still haven't made up your mind, please go to acxmasterclass.com and see what the previous students have said. There are videos for you. One thing when it comes to having, you know, they're called testimonials. And one thing when you are considering a product, a service, anything, it's one thing when there are 2 testimonials, it's another when there are like 80. And somebody had actually said to me, Dan, why do you have so many there? Like, you really think everyone's going to read all of those? And I said, no, but we're putting them all up there so someone can make their decision based on as much information as we can provide. So if what I can say to you is, if the concept of narrating audiobooks, being paid for it, appeals to you, and you qualify for ACX, which means an American citizen, basically, or a Canadian citizen, you know, there are a couple of exceptions for outside the U.S., then our job is to help you achieve success faster and perhaps to a greater degree than you might otherwise have done on your own. And David, I will, after that rambling speech, I will leave the last words, the final words of this ACX Masterclass Q&A call to Mr. David H. Lawrence, the 17th.
That's an easy one, Dan. The word is breathe.